Hello, and welcome to the final hangout for the ninth night of Millennial 2018. And this is with JF Garepi, Jean-Francois, JF, as we all know him, from the public space. I'm not going to say it in a mock French accent because that would be disrespectful. So, JF, welcome to Millennial.
It's a pleasure to be on the Millennial. It's such a magical thing to have one thing every year like that because you realize how much can happen in a year. Last year we were here talking about kraut and tea, and here I am now with a background set and the public space, which did not exist last time I came to the show.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you and I think you had been awake for 36 hours or something when we did that. And I was also just fucking exhausted. And yet we went on for the, I think, 2 hours telling this long story, the chronology of Kraut's downfall.
Absolutely. And I want to specify for those of you who tried connecting to my show earlier tonight, I had to cancel it. There were lag issues. And now I've contacted my ISP, and it seems that it was because an old lady connected an old TV set, an old analogic set to the cable network of my street. And they say it ruins the internet for the entire street. They have to go in her home to unplug this TV or put some filter. But for that reason, I have my internet upload speed that is absolutely ruined between 7 and 9 because she's turning on her analogic TV. So I'm sorry for those of you who wanted an episode of the public space tonight.
That's just ridiculous. Okay, all right. Well, let's continue. And yeah, indeed, it's a yearly thing, this, and a lot happens in a year. And of course, we could talk about that, but because it's late, and this is the fifth one I've done today, I am very tired. So instead, we're going to keep this one simple and just make it essentially a promo for your new book. And you're going to tell people why they should want to read The Revolutionary
Absolutely.
Phenotype. So
We
there you
can
go.
jump to it right now because it's so important. This book is so important for many reasons. This book is about a danger that is currently running human societies. And the danger is what happens if we start genetically modifying babies. And I didn't start this book as a warning against genetic modification. I really started it to understand biology, to come up with a new theory of biology that would complete a little bit of the missing links that Richard Dawkins had left behind, and that really any biologist didn't have an answer to. So I was interested in the emergence of life. I was interested in the mechanism that happened when genetic codes emerge. And I found out some shocking thing. And it turns out that there are these events that I call phenotypic revolutions. They are extremely important in the evolution of a life form. They've never happened on planet Earth for the last 4 billion years, but they happen every time a life form starts modifying its genes. Every time a life form starts trusting another entity to change its genes, a phenotypic revolution occurs. So my book documents these events, which we didn't know really about. They were hypothesized by some biologists, but we really never really realized that it had happened here on Earth. And that when DNA showed up on planet Earth 4 billion years ago, it showed up because of another life form. There was another life form on planet Earth 4 billion years ago. This other life form didn't use DNA at all, and slowly started using DNA to change its genes, to modify its genes. It trusted this new molecule that DNA was to just produce its own babies. And what we know what happened. What happened after is DNA took over. And I say we can learn a lesson from this as to how we should trust other entities to play with our genes. And the answer is we shouldn't. And I know that a lot of people come on this show to talk about the fate of the white race, and that's important. But I want to point out that on a small time scale, preserving the white race and preserving white nations, and eventually getting to a point where the white race can survive at some spot of this planet, it is extremely important. And I don't deny the importance of it. But in terms of time scale, it's a hundreds of years concern. And this concern will be in vain if within the next thousands of years, we are converting our baby-making system to one that trusts computers, that trusts other entities to determine the genes of our babies, the way it was just done in China. If we start these genetic modification, my point is, we're going to lose our normal sexual reproduction, and we're eventually going to be replaced by this machine that we will use. It's probably going to be a computer. I'm not necessarily predicting the form of that computer. But as we trust this machine, this external entity, to start making small genetic modifications to our babies, maybe at some point we will fix Parkinson's disease. All right, well, who doesn't want to have babies without Parkinson's disease? Who doesn't want to get rid of leukemia, cancer? Who doesn't want to get babies that will be a little more intelligent, a little more beautiful? But as we want to do this, we will leave more and more control to an AI, to our genetic code. The AI will determine more and more of the human genome until it determines all of it. And that day, I say, we are turning humanity into a bunch of puppets, because the AI will not be satisfied with just improving human life. It's also eventually going to modify us into becoming slaves to this entity, this AI, or these doctors, or whatever system we use to modify our genes. We will start evolving for this system. So we are at a crucial point in time in the history of our life form, because never in the last 4 billion years has the position of DNA in the reproductive cycle be questioned in any form. We didn't even get close. And right now, within 100 years, we had scientists around the world essentially undertaking a project of understanding and eventually modifying the human genome. And that project will be our death. We need to develop a global resistance movement for DNA-based human. We need to agree between nations that we won't modify our babies. We won't run into this crazy competition of who can make the best genetically modified babies. We have to agree on this earth between all human beings that we will not do that race, that this race is not worth it. And my book is the scientific case for this being an inevitable consequence if we do it. If we refuse to enter that contract, to enter that ceasefire agreement where we won't search to improve ourselves to crazy limits, to beyond those limits, where we will eventually be replaced.
Do you think that the Chinese will go along with this?
That is the problem. The big problem, the big fatality of our current state is that we had civilizations that have made developments, that had the intelligence of developing biochemistry, physics, and molecular biology. And now these things are spreading across the world with people who may not have the same ethical care that we may have had. Because I see a lot of people in Western civilization, scientists are pretty much unanimous. They don't know about my book. They haven't read The Revolutionary Phenotype, but they know something is wrong. And once they read my book, they will know what's wrong. But they have this feeling that something must be wrong with genetic modification. They have this moral intuition. I have the facts. I know exactly why it's wrong. It's wrong because eventually you get farmed out of existence. But they don't have to know this to have this ethical sense. The problem with big nations like China is that they are on this kind of rising enthusiasm for a technology that they really haven't developed for a long time, in the sense that they are benefiting from the progresses of Western civilization. And we see it in this case of Dr. He, who claims to be the first person who have modified to have modified human babies, and who announced this a few days before I released my book. So he comes from the US. He's done postdoctoral research in the US. He's learned everything he had to learn about CRISPR, goes back to China, and operates on his own, apparently without much of an ethical supervision other than talking to his friends, his doctor friends. It doesn't seem like the government was approving. So we can't even see this as being some form of Chinese government desire to modify babies. In fact, it seems that they opposed to that. But yeah, this enthusiasm in some nations is a problem. It is careless, and we now know to what extent it is careless, and it's so much more than we thought, because a lot of people, when they talk against genetic modification, they say, oh, but will people be using this to give blue eyes to their children? Believe me, once you've read The Revolutionary Phenotype, you will understand that people making aesthetic changes to their babies would be the least worries. My worry is that people will make changes to their babies that will lead these babies to make more babies. They will outcompete us through genetic modification. And once there is no more human who can reproduce naturally with sexual reproduction involving DNA, then we can say that we've been totally replaced by a form of master race controlled by computers. And really, this master race will not be so master to themselves. They will be sterile workers for the interest of reproducing algorithms in computers. And these computers will eventually use humanity as puppet to undertake their own goals in life, to favor their own reproduction.
I mean, obviously, the word that springs to mind is Skynet. Maybe yeah. It's just because I'm very tired, but, you know.
Well, there is a difference between Skynet and this. Skynet was a dangerous AI that has evolved from human modification, and it eventually became its own entity. The revolutionary phenotype is different. The revolutionary phenotype is a reproductive cycle that you engage with the machine. So Skynet kind of left humans alone, and then it made war against humans. And I don't want to minimize this problem. It could be a problem, a very powerful and intelligent AI that has its own interest. That would be extremely problematic, but it would be what I refer to as nukable. You know, we could get rid of it. It would be a war, but it would be a fair war. When you start genetically modifying your babies with information that comes from a computer, you are not playing a fair war, because everything that you are, all of your preferences, your emotions, they are all subject to manipulation by the artificial intelligence. And so you're playing a war that you've already lost, because it will change your desires. If your desires to make war against the computer become a problem, the computer will just eradicate them from your genome. Once we give control to computers, to the genetics of our babies, they will make whatever they want with it. And that is different from Skynet. Now, I do cover scenarios like Skynet in my book. I call them phenotypic separation. That's when you produce a life form and that life form just goes on its own, and eventually it can compete with you. But the phenotypic revolution is different from a phenotypic separation in that it stays within you until it's done with you.
Right. Okay. Now, the only real question that I'm trying to think of questions to ask, and it's kind of difficult because obviously this is a very complex, involved subject. And the only question I can think to ask here is, the last time this happened, it was unconscious biology that gave up its autonomy, its power to DNA. So, but obviously here, it would be a conscious process every step of the way. Should we let the computer do this or not? And so on. So why is that fatalism then?
Yeah, there would be consciousness, but I wouldn't say necessarily that all of the process that would happen in the future would be conscious. People take actions in very unconscious fashions, and they're not really conscious of the ensemble of the causes of their action. And I think the revolutionary phenotype would be the same. And very quick, people's consciousness would evolve to do whatever is favorable. If I'm telling you that, well, okay, your baby will not have Parkinson, it will be more intelligent, stronger, it will live about 300 years, and it will have 50 babies total in his entire life. And in fact, he will be happy at every point of this life. He will be extremely successful in the economic sector. And really, there's not going to be any worries. It's going to be a perfect life. Now, you can be conscious and look at this choice. I mean, who wouldn't choose that? Who would say, no, I'm going to condemn my baby to be like those other natural humans. I'm going to choose Parkinson's disease. I'm going to choose leukemia and cancer for my child. So it's one thing to say that it's conscious, but it's another thing to realize that the consciousness of humans are already biased toward their own replacement. And this thing, this machine that will make these offers to us, it will use each of our emotions. And even if it's conscious, it's going to make you want to do the right choice, make you join the machine, make you abandon your own existence to this other thing.
I see. But then what is the actual downside of, you know, if the machine is having to offer so much in order to persuade us to do this, what's the downside for us?
Absolutely. At first, there's no downside, really. It's going to be all good all the time. And you're gonna have a hard time convincing anyone not to do it. It's going to be all positive. Now, in the long run, what's happening, and that is the big downside, in the long run, the position of human beings in the chain of evolution is not the same anymore. You have to understand that what we are freedom lovers. We don't like other people stepping on our toes. We have ego. We have a search for love. We have a search for a good sexual partner. We have preferences in the sexual domain. All of these things are characteristics that evolve because we carry our genes. If we didn't carry our genes, we wouldn't be so egotistical. We wouldn't be so self-caring. The problem with the system I'm proposing and what will certainly happen is that the central entity that the computer is, or the clinic, or whatever reproductive tool you use, and it's, of course, it's going to involve CRISPR, it's going to involve doctors, and it's going to involve computers, because at some point there will be too many genes to really hold in your brain, and at some point even the doctors will say, well, let's just trust the statistics on this computer table. The big problem is that now your genes are not the things you carry in you anymore. Because first, you don't even need sexual reproduction anymore. All you need is a saliva sample that you give to the doctor, and they will make a baby with your genes mixed up with the recommendations of a computer. Now, at this point, the genes that you're evolving for are not those you carry in your sexual organ. At this point, the genes you evolve for are those that are stored on the hard drive of the computer. And really, it's not so much a competition between being good humans anymore. Evolution always has driven some good human behavior to self-sustain, to care for yourself, and to care for the decisions you make. Now, at this point, and through generations, what happens is that human behavior is selected for its service to the bits on the computer hard drive. And ultimately, you have many computers eventually competing between one another. How can I make a human that is more caring of me than it is of itself? If you really want to know what will happen with human beings if we do this, look at an ant colony. We will be like the sterile workers of the ant colony. Why are the sterile workers so sacrificial? Why do they care about gathering food for the queen? Well, it's because their genes are located in the queen. They don't even carry a reproductive version of their genes. They carry a copy of the genes that merely allows them to do the work for the genes that are located in the queen. The system that will emerge in human civilization if we start modifying our babies is one of queen and sterile workers. And the big fatality, the big drama here is that humans, who are the egotistical people that we know, will become sterile workers.
Right, I think I understand. But again, it seems like something that could be prevented simply by programming the computer to not think of itself, to not think of its own interests.
The problem is the computer doesn't even think of its own interests. So my book presents the scenario as follows. The computer has no intelligence. He has no care. He has no consciousness. The computer is just a series of bits that are enacting some recommendation. It's essentially a list of human genes that you should modify if you want to improve. Now you have this version of the computer. Now you have another corporation. It makes another recipe. Of course, there's not a single recipe for improving humans. And so some corporations converge toward, let's change gene A, B, C. Some other corporation will tell you, let's change gene A, B, and D, but not C. Now, what you have is a competition between different computers. How much is corporation one going to produce humans? How many babies will these humans have? And how much will corporation two produce humans? And if corporation two produces better humans, it will outcompete corporation one. And the problem is you have humans that are encoded with various features. And if these humans are more coordinated in group, they will, of course, be more efficient because there is a huge cost to the system of egos and of, you know, personal battles between males. This is all very costly. It's useful to us because we are humans that are fighting for the struggle for survival and the struggle for reproduction. But the day we our goal is to outcompete Corporation One, we can be much more coordinated. We can have much less care for ourselves. And the problem is this is an evolutionary system. It's not a conscious one. Corporation Two doesn't have to know that it's doing that, but it will be doing that because it's going to be better than Corporation One. And progressively, human genetics will be modified to be more coordinated across corporations, across clinics that share the same recipe for human genetics. People of these single clinics will be more similar to each other genetically. And so you might actually have even kin selection developing within the people who are given birth to in a single clinic. And ultimately, what you'll have is a competition between clinics that operates without a single conscious being in the process, just outcrowding and out-modifying human genetics to the interest of the reproduction of the bits on the hard drive. And who will be there a million years after? It will be those hard drives that will have successfully coordinated societies of humans to outcompete and genocide the rest, really.
Right. Okay. Now I think I do understand. So I have no questions. Actually, I think it's a very interesting theory, and you seem to have everything sort of covered that I can think of. So I don't know. Are there any questions? Let me see the super chat. Hold on a sec. All right, keep talking. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I can also talk, because this book, although I've been making an intro on human genetic modification, there's really one chapter that's about human genetic modification. This book actually develops an important theory of biology, which fills in the missing hole. And so, first and foremost, it's a book you should read if you're interested in biology and interested in how does life emerge. Because here's the kicker. What I've just described happened 4 billion years ago. It happened because a very small life form, the RNA life form, started doing that. It started using this other entity, and it was, hey, look, if we copy some of our genes in there, it can make better babies than we would ourselves. And what was this other entity? It was DNA. And we are the descendants of the DNA strands that have successfully overtook the old organism, kicked out the capacity of RNA to make babies of its own. And it, therefore, my theory not only explains the great dangers that humanity is faced with in the future if we do that, it also explains the emergence of life. It explains why our life form is the way it is.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's leave it at that. Short and sweet, because I can't, I mean, I can't do it. I have understood what you've said, but I can't interact with it.
Well, someone on the regular chat says, is JF predicting this will actually happen? Absolutely. If we don't take means right now within the next few decades to stop genetic modification, this is what will happen. I'm not telling you based on futurologistic consideration. I'm not hypothesizing a new technology that will emerge. I don't care about the meteorites that will hit the Earth. What I'm telling you is that our theory of biology right now is telling us what happens when life forms trusted our life forms to carry their genes. And this is what happens. Humanity will be farmed by an AI. And it's not really a matter of whether the AI is intelligent or not. The question is, will this AI have power to modify human babies? If it does, it doesn't even matter if it's a stupid AI. The stupid will win.
All right. Excellent. Well, that's J. Edgar Epe with the revolutionary phenotype. It's a shame that there aren't other things we can discuss, but circumstances dictate that it must be like this year. Maybe next year we'll have a more varied conversation. Excellent. All right, let's leave it at that. JF, thank you for taking part here. And I hope that
it was a pleasure being here. How's the right wing doing on the internet?
Not so good at 4 a.m.
All right, Millionaire Woz is tired. I don't want to take more of this time. Everyone, thank you for coming and bye bye.
All right. Now I'm the host. You forgot. I'm awake enough to remember that I'm the one who should say that. All right. Okay. All right. Let's leave it. That's JF, and I will see you tomorrow night. Let me just read out who's appearing tomorrow night. Dancing Dove, Boer Republic, that's a South African organization, Martin Lichtmes, Lads Society, which is an Australian organization, and then the Bronx Blogger. And, yeah, there we are. So we'll see how that goes. All right. That's that for tonight. See you tomorrow.